Beside her, a tremor went through Charles Wallace, but he sat very still. He shouldn't be seeing this, Meg thought. This is too much for so little a boy, no matter how different and extraordinary a little boy. Calvin turned, rejecting the dark thing that blotted out the light of the stars. "Make it go away, Mrs. Watson," he whispered. "Make it go away, it's evil." Slowly, the great creature turned around so that the shadow was behind them, so that they saw only the stars unobscured, the soft throb of starlight on the mountain, the descending circle of the great moon swiftly slipping over the horizon. Then, without a word from Mrs. Watson, they were traveling downward, down, down. When they reached the corona of clouds, Mrs. Watson said, "You can breathe without the flowers now, my children." Silence again. Not a word. It was as though the shadow had somehow reached out with its dark power and touched them so that they were incapable of speech. When they got back to the flowery field, bathed now in starlight and moonlight from another smaller, yellower rising moon, a little of the tenseness went out of their bodies, and they realized that the body of the beautiful creature on which they rode had been as rigid as theirs. With a graceful gesture, it dropped to the ground and folded its great wings. Charles Wallace was the first to slide off. "Mrs. Who? Mrs. Witch?" he called, and there was an immediate quivering in the air. Mrs. Who's familiar glasses gleamed at them. Mrs. Witch appeared too, but as she had told the children, it was difficult for her to materialize completely, and though there was the robe and peaked hat, Meg could look through them to mountain and stars. She slid off Mrs. Watson's back and walked, rather unsteadily after the long ride, over to Mrs. Witch. "That dark thing we saw," she said. "Is that what my father is fighting?" Chapter 5. The Tesseract.
"Yes," Mrs. Witch said. "He is behind the darkness, so that even we cannot see him."
Meg began to cry, to sob aloud. Through her tears, she could see Charles Wallace standing there, very small, very white. Calvin put his arms around her, but she shuddered and broke away, sobbing wildly. Then she was enfolded in the great wings of Mrs. Watson, and she felt comfort and strength pouring through her. Mrs. Watson was not speaking aloud, and yet through the wings, Meg understood words.
"My child, do not despair. Do you think we would have brought you here if there were no hope? We are asking you to do a difficult thing, but we are confident that you can do it. Your father needs help. He needs courage, and for his children he may be able to do what he cannot do for himself."
"Now," Mrs. Witch said, "are we ready?"
"Where are we going?" Calvin asked. Again, Meg felt an actual physical tingling of fear as Mrs. Witch spoke.
"We must go behind the shadow."
"But we will not do it all at once," Mrs. Watson comforted them.
"We will do it in short stages." She looked at Meg. "Now we will tesser. We will wrinkle again, do you understand?"
"No,"
Meg said flatly. Mrs. Watson sighed.
"Explanations are not easy when they are about things for which your civilization still has no words. Calvin talked about traveling at the speed of light. You understand that, little Meg?"
"Yes," Meg nodded.
"That, of course, is the impractical long way around. We have learned to take shortcuts wherever possible."
"Sort of like in math?" Meg asked. Like in math. Mrs. Watsit looked over at Mrs. Who. Take your skirt and show them.
La experiencia es la madre de la ciencia. Spanish, my dears, Cervantes. Experience is the mother of knowledge.
Mrs. Who took a portion of her white robe in her hands and held it tight. You see, Mrs. Watsit said, if a very small insect were to move from the section of skirt in Mrs. Who's right hand to that in her left, it would be quite a long walk for him if he had to walk straight across. Swiftly, Mrs. Who brought her hands, still holding the skirt, together. Now you see, Mrs. Watsit said, he would be there without that long trip. That is how we travel. Charles Wallace accepted the explanation serenely. Even Calvin did not seem perturbed. Oh, dear, Meg sighed. I guess I am a moron. I just don't get it. That is because you think of space only in three dimensions, Mrs. Watsit told her. We travel in the fifth dimension. This is something you can understand, Meg. Don't be afraid to try. Was your mother able to explain a tesseract to you?
Well, she never did, Meg said. She got so upset about it. Why, Mrs. Watsit? She said it had something to do with her and father.
It was a concept they were playing with, Mrs. Watsit said. Going beyond the fourth dimension to the fifth. Did your mother explain it to you, Charles?
Well, yes, Charles looked a little embarrassed. Please don't be hurt, Meg. I just kept at her while you were at school till I got it out of her.
Meg sighed.
Just explain it to me.
Okay, Charles said.
What is the first dimension?
Well, a line.
Okay, and the second dimension?
Well, you'd square the line. A flat square would be in the second dimension.
And the third?
Well, you'd square the second dimension. Then the square wouldn't be flat anymore. It would have a bottom and sides and a top.
And the fourth?
Well, I guess if you want to put it into mathematical terms, you'd square the square. But you can't take a pencil and draw it the way you can the first three. I know it's got something to do with Einstein and time. I guess maybe you could call the fourth dimension time.
That's right, Charles said. Good girl. Okay, then, for the fifth dimension, you'd square the fourth, wouldn't you?
I guess so.
Well, the fifth dimension's a tesseract. You add that to the other four dimensions, and you can travel through space without having to go the long way around. In other words, to put it into Euclid, or old-fashioned plane geometry, a straight line is not the shortest distance between two points.
For a brief, illuminating second, Meg's face had the listening, probing expression that was so often seen on Charles's.
I see, she cried. I got it. For just a moment, I got it. I can't possibly explain it now, but there, for a second, I saw it.
She turned excitedly to Calvin. Did you get it? He nodded.
Enough. I don't understand it the way Charles Wallace does, but enough to get the idea.
So now we go, Mrs. Witch said. There is not all the time in the world.
Could we hold hands? Meg asked. Calvin took her hand and held it tightly in his.
You can try, Mrs. Watsit said, though I'm not sure how it will work. You see, though we travel together, we travel alone. We will go first and take you afterward in the backwash. That may be easier for you.
As she spoke, the great white body began to waver, the wings to dissolve into mist. Mrs. Who seemed to evaporate until there was nothing but the glasses, and then the glasses, too, disappeared. It reminded Meg of the Cheshire Cat.
I've often seen a face without glasses, she thought, but glasses without a face. I wonder if I go that way, too. First me, and then my glasses?
She looked over at Mrs. Witch. Mrs. Witch was there, and then she wasn't. There was a gust of wind and a great thrust and a sharp shattering as she was shoved through what? Then darkness, silence, nothingness. If Calvin was still holding her hand, she could not feel it. But this time she was prepared for the sudden and complete dissolution of her body. When she felt the tingling coming back to her fingertips, she knew that this journey was almost over, and she could feel again the pressure of Calvin's hand about hers. Without warning, coming as a complete and unexpected shock, she felt a pressure she had never imagined, as though she were being completely flattened out by an enormous steamroller. This was far worse than the nothingness had been. While she was nothing, there was no need to breathe, but now her lungs were squeezed together so that although she was dying for want of air, there was no way for her lungs to expand and contract, to take in the air that she must have to stay alive. This was completely different from the thinning of atmosphere when they flew up the mountain, and she had had to put the flowers to her face to breathe. She tried to gasp, but a paper doll can't gasp. She thought she was trying to think, but her flattened-out mind was as unable to function as her lungs. Her thoughts were squashed along with the rest of her. Her heart tried to beat. It gave a knife-like, sidewise movement, but it could not expand. But then she seemed to hear a voice, or if not a voice, at least words, words flattened out like printed words on paper. Oh no, we can't stop here. This is a two-dimensional planet, and the children can't manage here. She was whizzed into nothingness again, and nothingness was wonderful. She did not mind that she could not feel Calvin's hand, that she could not see or feel or be. The relief from the intolerable pressure was all she needed. Then the tingling began to come back to her fingers, her toes. She could feel Calvin holding her tightly. Her heart beat regularly. Blood coursed through her veins. Whatever had happened, whatever mistake had been made, it was over now. She thought she heard Charles Wallace saying, his words round and full as spoken words ought to be, "Really, Mrs. Witch, you might have killed us." This time, she was pushed out of the frightening fifth dimension with a sudden, immediate jerk. There she was, herself again, standing with Calvin beside her, holding onto her hand for dear life, and Charles Wallace in front of her, looking indignant. Mrs. Watsit, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Witch were not visible, but she knew that they were there. The fact of their presence was strong about her.
"Children, I apologize," came Mrs. Witch's voice.
"Now, Charles, calm down," Mrs. Watsit said, appearing not as the great and beautiful beast she had been when they last saw her, but in her familiar wild garb of shawls and scarves and the old tramp's coat and hat. "You know how difficult it is for her to materialize. If you are not substantial yourself, it's very difficult to realize how limiting protoplasm is."
"I am sorry,"
Mrs. Witch's voice came again, but there was more than a hint of amusement in it.
"It is not funny."
Charles Wallace gave a childish stamp of his foot. Mrs. Who's glasses shone out, and the rest of her appeared more slowly behind them.
"We are such stuff as dreams are made on," she smiled broadly. "Prospero in the Tempest, I do like that play."
"You didn't do it on purpose?" Charles demanded. "Oh, my darling, of course not," Mrs. Watsit said quickly. "It was just a very understandable mistake.
It's very difficult for Mrs. Witch to think in a corporeal way. She wouldn't hurt you deliberately, you know that. And it's really a very pleasant little planet, and rather amusing to be flat. We always enjoy our visits there. Where are we now, then? Charles Wallace demanded. And why? In Orion's Belt. We have a friend here, and we want you to have a look at your own planet. When are we going home? Meg asked anxiously. What about Mother? What about the twins? They'll be terribly worried about us. When we didn't come in at bedtime, well, Mother must be frantic by now. She and the twins and Fort will have been looking and looking for us, and of course we aren't there to be found. Now don't worry, my pet, Mrs. Watsit said cheerfully. We took care of that before we left. Your mother has had enough to worry her with you and Charles to cope with, and not knowing about your father without our adding to her anxieties. We took a time wrinkle as well as a space wrinkle. It's very easy to do if you just know how. What do you mean? Meg asked plaintively. Please, Mrs. Watsit, it's all so confusing. Just relax and don't worry over things that needn't trouble you, Mrs. Watsit said. We made a nice, tidy little time, Tesser, and unless something goes terribly wrong, we'll have you back about 5 minutes before you left. So there'll be time to spare, and nobody'll ever need to know you were gone at all. Though, of course, you'll be telling your mother, dear lamb that she is. And if something goes terribly wrong, it won't matter whether we ever get back at all.
Don't frighten them, Mrs. Witch's voice came. Are you losing faith?
Oh, I'm not. But Meg thought her voice sounded a little faint.
I hope this is a nice planet, Calvin said. We can't see much of it. Does it ever clear up?
Meg looked around her, realizing that she had been so breathless from the journey and the stop on the two-dimensional planet that she had not noticed her surroundings. And perhaps this was not very surprising, for the main thing about the surroundings was exactly that they were unnoticeable. They seemed to be standing on some kind of nondescript, flat surface. The air around them was gray. It was not exactly fog, but she could see nothing through it. Visibility was limited to the nicely definite bodies of Charles Wallace and Calvin, the rather unbelievable bodies of Mrs. Watsit and Mrs. Who, and a faint occasional glimmer that was Mrs. Witch.
Come, children, Mrs. Watsit said. We don't have far to go, and we might as well walk. It will do you good to stretch your legs a little.
As they moved through the grayness, Meg caught an occasional glimpse of slag-like rocks, but there were no traces of trees or bushes, nothing but flat ground under their feet, no sign of any vegetation at all. Finally, ahead of them there loomed what seemed to be a hill of stone. As they approached it, Meg could see that there was an entrance that led into a deep, dark cavern.
Are we going in there? She asked nervously.
Don't be afraid, Mrs. Watsit said. It's easier for the happy medium to work within. Oh, you'll like her, children. She's very jolly. If ever I saw her looking unhappy, I would be very depressed myself. As long as she can laugh, I'm sure everything is going to come out right in the end.
Mrs. Watsit, came Mrs. Witch's voice severely. Just because you are very young is no excuse for talking too much.
Mrs. Watsit looked hurt, but she subsided.
Just how old are you? Calvin asked her.
Just a moment, Mrs. Watsit murmured and appeared to calculate rapidly upon her fingers. She nodded triumphantly.
Exactly 2,379,152,497 years, 8 months, and 3 days. That is according to your calendar, of course, which even you know isn't very accurate.
She leaned closer to Meg and Calvin and whispered,
It was really a very great honor for me to be chosen for this mission. It's just because of my verbalizing and materializing so well, you know. But of course, we can't take any credit for our talents. It's how we use them that counts. And I make far too many mistakes. That's why Mrs. Who and I enjoyed seeing Mrs. Witch make a mistake when she tried to land you on a two-dimensional planet. It was that we were laughing at, not at you. She was laughing at herself, you see. She's really terribly nice to us younger ones.
Meg was listening with such interest to what Mrs. Watsit was saying that she hardly noticed when they went into the cave. The transition from the grayness of outside to the grayness of inside was almost unnoticeable. She saw a flickering light ahead of them, ahead and down, and it was toward this that they went. As they drew closer, she realized that it was a fire.
"It gets very cold in here," Mrs. Watsit said. "So we asked her to have a good bonfire going for you."
As they approached the fire, they could see a dark shadow against it. And as they went closer still, they could see that the shadow was a woman. She wore a turban of beautiful pale mauve silk and a long, flowing purple satin gown. In her hands was a crystal ball into which she was gazing raptly. She did not appear to see the children, Mrs. Watsit, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Witch, but continued to stare into the crystal ball. And as she stared, she began to laugh. And she laughed and laughed at whatever it was that she was seeing. Mrs. Witch's voice rang out clear and strong, echoing against the walls of the cavern, and the words fell with a sonorous clang.
"We are here."
The woman looked up from the ball, and when she saw them, she got up and curtsied deeply. Mrs. Watsit and Mrs. Who dropped small curtsies in return, and the shimmer seemed to bow slightly.
"Oh, medium dear," Mrs. Watsit said. "These are the children. Charles Wallace Murray?"
Charles Wallace bowed.
"Margaret Murray?"
Meg felt that if Mrs. Watsit and Mrs. Who had curtsied, she ought to also. So she did, rather awkwardly.
"And Calvin O'Keefe?"
Calvin bobbed his head.
"We want them to see their home planet," Mrs. Watsit said.
The medium lost the delighted smile she had worn till then.
"Oh, why must you make me look at unpleasant things when there are so many delightful ones to see?"
Again, Mrs. Witch's voice reverberated through the cave.
"There will no longer be so many pleasant things to look at if responsible people do not do something about the unpleasant ones."
The medium sighed and held the ball high.
"Look, children," Mrs. Watsit said. "Look into it well."
"Que la terre est petite à qui la voit des yeux de l'île. How small is the earth to him who looks from heaven,"
Mrs. Who intoned musically. Meg looked into the crystal ball, at first with caution, then with increasing eagerness, as she seemed to see an enormous sweep of dark and empty space, and then galaxies swinging across it. Finally, they seemed to move in closer on one of the galaxies.
"Your own Milky Way," Mrs. Watsit whispered to Meg.
They were headed directly toward the center of the galaxy. Then they moved off to one side. Stars seemed to be rushing at them. Meg flung her arm up over her face as though to ward off the blow.
"Look,"
Mrs. Witch commanded. Meg dropped her arm. They seemed to be moving in toward a planet. She thought she could make out polar ice caps. Everything seemed sparkling clear.
"No, no, medium dear, that's Mars,"
Mrs. Watsit reproved gently.
"Do I have to?"
the medium asked.
"Now,"
Mrs. Witch commanded. The bright planet moved out of their vision. For a moment, there was the darkness of space, then another planet. The outlines of this planet were not clean and clear. It seemed to be covered with a smoky haze. Through the haze, Meg thought she could make out the familiar outlines of continents, like pictures in her social studies books. "Is it because of our atmosphere that we can't see properly?" she asked anxiously.
"No, Meg. You know that it is not the atmosphere,"
Mrs. Witch said.
"You must be brave."
"It's the thing," Charles Wallace cried. "It's the dark thing we saw from the mountain peak on Uriel when we were riding on Mrs. What's-its back." "Did it just come?" Meg asked in agony, unable to take her eyes from the sickness of the shadow which darkened the beauty of the earth. "Did it just come while we've been gone?"
Mrs. Witch's voice seemed very tired.
"Tell her," she said to Mrs. Watsit.
Mrs. Watsit sighed.
"No, Meg, it hasn't just come. It has been there for a great many years. That is why your planet is such a troubled one."
"But why?" Calvin started to ask, his voice croaking hoarsely. Mrs. Watsit raised her hand to silence him.
"We showed you the dark thing on Uriel first, oh, for many reasons. First, because the atmosphere on the mountain peaks there is so clear and thin you could see it for what it is. And we thought it would be easier for you to understand it if you saw it, well, someplace else first, not your own Earth."
"I hate it," Charles Wallace cried passionately. "I hate the dark thing." Mrs. Watsit nodded.
"Yes, Charles, dear, we all do. That's another reason we wanted to prepare you on Uriel. We thought it would be too frightening for you to see it, first of all, about your own beloved world."
"But what is it?" Calvin demanded. "We know that it's evil, but what is it?"
"You have said it,"
Mrs. Witch's voice rang out.
"It is evil. It is the powers of darkness."
"But what's going to happen?" Meg's voice trembled. "Oh, please, Mrs. Witch, tell us what's going to happen."
"We will continue to fight."
Something in Mrs. Witch's voice made all three of the children stand straighter, throwing back their shoulders with determination, looking at the glimmer that was Mrs. Witch with pride and confidence.
"And we're not alone, you know, children," came Mrs. Watsit, the comforter. "All through the universe it's being fought, all through the cosmos, and my, but it's a grand and exciting battle. I know it's hard for you to understand about size, how there's very little difference in the size of the tiniest microbe and the greatest galaxy. You think about that, and maybe it won't seem strange to you that some of our very best fighters have come right from your own planet. And it's a little planet, dears, out on the edge of a little galaxy. You can be proud that it's done so well."
"Who have our fighters been?" Calvin asked.
"Oh, you must know them, dear," Mrs. Watsit said.
Mrs. Who's spectacles shone out at them triumphantly.
"And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not."
"Jesus,"
Charles Wallace said.
"Why, of course, Jesus."
"Of course," Mrs. Watsit said. "Go on, Charles, love. There were others. All your great artists. They've been lights for us to see by."
"Leonardo da Vinci," Calvin suggested tentatively. "And Michelangelo?"
"And Shakespeare," Charles Wallace called out. "And Bach, and Pasteur, and Madame Curie, and Einstein?"
Now Calvin's voice rang with confidence. And Schweitzer and Gandhi and Buddha and Beethoven and Rembrandt and St. Francis?
Now you, Meg, Mrs. Watson ordered.
Oh, Euclid, I suppose. Meg was in such an agony of impatience that her voice grated irritably. And Copernicus, but what about Father? Please, what about Father?
We are going to your father, Mrs. Witch said.
But where is he? Meg went over to Mrs. Witch and stamped as though she were as young as Charles Wallace. Mrs. Watson answered in a voice that was low, but quite firm.
On a planet that has given in. So you must prepare to be very strong.
All traces of cheer had left the happy medium's face. She sat, holding the great ball, looking down at the shadowed earth, and a slow tear coursed down her cheek.
I can't stand it any longer, she sobbed. Watch now, children, watch!
Chapter 6 The Happy Medium. Again, they focused their eyes on the crystal ball. The earth, with its fearful covering of dark shadow, swam out of view, and they moved rapidly through the Milky Way. And there was the thing again.
Watch,
the medium told them. The darkness seemed to seethe and writhe. Was this meant to comfort them? Suddenly, there was a great burst of light through the darkness. The light spread out, and where it touched the darkness disappeared. The light spread out until the patch of dark thing had vanished, and there was only a gentle shining, and through the shining came the stars, clear and pure. Then, slowly, the shining dwindled until it, too, was gone, and there was nothing but stars and starlight. No shadows, no fear. Only the stars and the clear darkness of space, quite different from the fearful darkness of the thing.
You see,
the medium cried, smiling happily.
It can be overcome. It is being overcome all the time.
Mrs. Watson sighed, a sigh so sad that Meg wanted to put her arms around her and comfort her.
Tell us exactly what happened then, please. Charles Wallace said in a small voice.
It was a star, Mrs. Watson said sadly. A star giving up its life in battle with the thing.
It won, oh yes, my children, it won,
but it lost its life in the winning.
Mrs. Witch spoke again. Her voice sounded tired, and they knew that speaking was a tremendous effort for her.
It was not so long ago for you, was it?
She asked gently. Mrs. Watson shook her head. Charles Wallace went up to Mrs. Watson.
I see. Now I understand. You were a star once, weren't you?
Mrs. Watson covered her face with her hands as though she were embarrassed and nodded.
And you did. You did what that star just did?
With her face still covered, Mrs. Watson nodded again. Charles Wallace looked at her very solemnly.
I should like to kiss you.
Mrs. Watson took her hands down from her face and pulled Charles Wallace to her in a quick embrace. He put his arms around her neck, pressed his cheek against hers, and then kissed her. Meg felt that she would have liked to kiss Mrs. Watson too, but that after Charles Wallace, anything that she or Calvin did or said would be anticlimax. She contented herself with looking at Mrs. Watson, even though she was used to Mrs. Watson's odd get-up, and the very oddness of it was what made her seem so comforting. She realized with a fresh shock that it was not Mrs. Watson herself that she was seeing at all. The complete, the true Mrs. Watson, Meg realized, was beyond human understanding. What she saw was only the game Mrs. Watson was playing. It was an amusing and charming game,
a game full of both laughter and comfort, but it was only the tiniest facet of all the things Mrs. Watsit could be.
"I didn't mean to tell you," Mrs. Watsit faltered. "I didn't mean ever to let you know, but oh, my dears, I did so love being a star."
"You are still very young," Mrs. Witch said, her voice faintly chiding.
The medium sat looking happily at the star-filled sky in her ball, smiling and nodding and chuckling gently. But Meg noticed that her eyes were drooping, and suddenly her head fell forward and she gave a faint snore.
"Poor thing," Mrs. Watsit said. "We've worn her out. It's very hard work for her."
"Please, Mrs. Watsit," Meg asked, "what happens now? Why are we here? What do we do next? Where is Father? When are we going to him?"
She clasped her hands pleadingly.
"One thing at a time, love," Mrs. Watsit said.
Mrs. Who cut in.
"As paredes tem oidus."
"That's Portuguese. Walls have ears."
"Yes, let us go outside," Mrs. Watsit said. "Come, we'll let her sleep."
But as they turned to go, the medium jerked her head up and smiled at them radiantly.
"You weren't going to go without saying goodbye to me, were you?" she asked. "We thought we'd just let you sleep, dear," Mrs. Watsit patted the medium's shoulder. "We worked you terribly hard, and we know you must be very tired."
"But I was going to give you some ambrosia, or nectar, or at least some tea."
At this, Meg realized that she was hungry. How much time had passed since they had had their bowls of stew, she wondered. But Mrs. Watsit said,
"Oh, thank you, dear, but I think we'd better be going."
"They don't need to eat, you know," Charles Wallace whispered to Meg. "At least not food the way we do. Eating's just a game with them. As soon as we get organized again, I'd better remind them that they'll have to feed us sooner or later."
The medium smiled and nodded. "It does seem as though I should be able to do something nice for you after having had to show those poor children such horrid things. Would they like to see their mother before they go?"
"Could we see Father?" Meg asked eagerly.
"No," Mrs. Witch said. "We are going to your father, Meg. Do not be impatient."
"But she could see her mother, couldn't she?" the medium wheedled.
"Oh, why not?" Mrs. Watsit put in. "It won't take long, and it can't do any harm."
"And Calvin, too?" Meg asked. "Could he see his mother, too?"
Calvin touched Meg in a quick gesture, and whether it was of thanks or apprehension, she was not sure.
"I think it is a mistake,"
Mrs. Witch was disapproving.
"But since you have mentioned it, I suppose you must go ahead."
"I hate it when she gets cross," Mrs. Watsit said, glancing over at Mrs. Witch. "And the trouble is, she always seems to be right. But I really don't see how it could hurt, and it might make you all feel better. Go on, medium dear."
The medium, smiling and humming softly, turned the crystal ball a little between her hands. Stars, comets, planets flashed across the sky, and then the Earth came into view again, the darkened Earth, closer, closer, till it filled the globe, and they had somehow gone through the darkness until the soft white of clouds and the gentle outline of continents shone clearly.
"Calvin's mother first," Meg whispered to the medium.
The globe became hazy, cloudy. Then shadows began to solidify, to clarify, and they were looking into an untidy kitchen with a sink full of unwashed dishes. In front of the sink stood an unkempt woman with gray hair stringing about her face. Her mouth was open, and Meg could see the toothless gums, and it seemed that she could almost hear her screaming at two small children who were standing by her. Then, She grabbed a long wooden spoon from the sink and began whacking one of the children.
Oh, dear,
the medium murmured, and the picture began to dissolve.
I didn't really.
It's all right, Calvin said in a low voice. I think I'd rather you knew.
Now, instead of reaching out to Calvin for safety, Meg took his hand in hers, not saying anything in words, but trying to tell him by the pressure of her fingers what she felt. If anyone had told her only the day before that she, Meg, the snaggle-toothed, the myopic, the clumsy, would be taking a boy's hand to offer him comfort and strength, particularly a popular and important boy like Calvin, the idea would have been beyond her comprehension. But now it seemed as natural to want to help and protect Calvin as it did Charles Wallace. The shadows were swirling in the crystal again, and as they cleared, Meg began to recognize her mother's lab at home. Mrs. Murray was sitting perched on her high stool, writing away at a sheet of paper on a clipboard on her lap. She's writing Father, Meg thought, the way she always does, every night. The tears that she could never learn to control swam to her eyes as she watched. Mrs. Murray looked up from her letter, almost as though she were looking toward the children. And then her head drooped, and she put it down on the paper and sat there, huddled up, letting herself relax into an unhappiness that she never allowed her children to see. And now, the desire for tears left Meg. The hot, protective anger she had felt for Calvin when she looked into his home, she now felt turned toward her mother. Let's go, she cried harshly. Let's do something. She's always so right, Mrs. Watson murmured, looking towards Mrs. Witch. Sometimes I wish she'd just say I told you so and have done with it.
I only meant to help,
the medium wailed.
Oh, medium dear, don't feel badly, Mrs. Watson said swiftly. Look at something cheerful, do. I can't bear to have you distressed.
It's all right, Meg assured the medium earnestly. Truly, it is, Mrs. Medium, and we thank you very much.
Are you sure?
The medium asked, brightening.
Of course, it really helped ever so much because it made me mad, and when I'm mad, I don't have room to be scared. Well, kiss me goodbye for good luck, then, the medium said.
Meg went over to her and gave her a quick kiss, and so did Charles Wallace. The medium looked smilingly at Calvin and winked.
I want the young man to kiss me, too. I always did love red hair, and it'll give you good luck, laddie me love.
Calvin bent down, blushing, and awkwardly kissed her cheek. The medium tweaked his nose.
You've got a lot to learn, my boy, she told him. Now, goodbye, medium dear, and many thanks, Mrs. Watson said. I dare say we'll see you in an eon or two. Where are you going in case I want to tune in? The medium asked.
Camazotz, Mrs. Watson told her.
Where and what was Camazotz? Meg did not like the sound of the word or the way in which Mrs. Watson pronounced it.
But please don't distress yourself on our behalf. You know you don't like looking in on the dark planets, and it's very upsetting to us when you aren't happy. But I must know what happens to the children, the medium said. It's my worst trouble, getting fond. If I didn't get fond, I could be happy all the time. Oh, well, ho-hum. I manage to keep pretty jolly, and a little snooze will do wonders for me right now. Goodbye, everybody.
Her words got lost in the general buzz of a snore.
Come, Mrs. Witch ordered,
and they followed her out of the darkness of the cave to the impersonal grayness of the medium's planet.
Now, children, you must not be frightened at what is going to happen, Mrs. Witch warned.
Stay angry, little Meg, Mrs. Watson whispered. You will need all your anger now.
Without warning, Meg was swept into nothingness again. This time, the nothingness was interrupted by a feeling of clammy coldness, such as she had never felt before. The coldness deepened and swirled all about her and through her and was filled with a new and strange kind of darkness that was a completely tangible thing, a thing that wanted to eat and digest her like some enormous malignant beast of prey. Then, the darkness was gone. Had it been the shadow? The black thing? Had they had to travel through it to get to her father? There was the by now familiar tingling in her hands and feet and the push through hardness, and she was on her feet, breathless but unharmed, standing beside Calvin and Charles Wallace. "Is this Kamazots?" Charles Wallace asked as Mrs. Watsit materialized in front of him.
"Yes," she answered. "Now let us just stand and get our breath and look around."
They were standing on a hill, and as Meg looked about her, she felt that it could easily be a hill on Earth. There were the familiar trees she knew so well at home, birches, pines, maples, and though it was warmer than it had been when they so precipitously left the apple orchard, there was a faintly autumnal touch to the air. Near them were several small trees with reddened leaves very like sumac, and a big patch of goldenrod-like flowers. As she looked down the hill, she could see the smokestacks of a town, and it might have been one of any number of familiar towns. There seemed to be nothing strange or different or frightening in the landscape. But Mrs. Watsit came to her and put an arm around her comfortingly.
"I can't stay with you here, you know, love," she said. "You three children will be on your own. We will be near you, we will be watching you, but you will not be able to see us or to ask us for help, and we will not be able to come to you."
"But is Father here?" Meg asked tremblingly.
"Yes."
"But where? When will we see him?"
She was poised for running, as though she were going to sprint off immediately to wherever her father was.
"That I cannot tell you. You will just have to wait until the propitious moment."
Charles Wallace looked steadily at Mrs. Watsit.
"Are you afraid for us?"
"A little. But if you weren't afraid to do what you did when you were a star, why should you be afraid for us now?"
"But I was afraid," Mrs. Watsit said gently. She looked steadily at each of the three children in turn.
"You will need help," she told them. "But all I am allowed to give you is a little talisman. Calvin, your great gift is your ability to communicate with all kinds of people. So for you, I will strengthen this gift. Meg, I give you your faults."
"My faults?" Meg cried.
"Your faults.
But I'm always trying to get rid of my faults."
"Yes," Mrs. Watsit said. "However, I think you'll find they'll come in very handy on Kamazots.
Charles Wallace, to you I can give only the resilience of your childhood." From somewhere, Mrs. Who's glasses glimmered and they heard her voice.
"Calvin," she said, "a hint. For you, a hint. Listen well. For that he was a spirit too delicate to act their earthy and abhorred commands. Refusing their grand hests, they did confine him by help of their most potent ministers, and in their most unmitigable rage, into a cloven pine, within which rift imprisoned he didst painfully remain. Shakespeare, The Tempest."
"Where are you, Mrs. Who?" Charles Wallace asked. "Where is Mrs. Witch?"
"We cannot come to you now,"
Mrs. Who's voice blew to them like the wind.
"Alwissend bin ich nicht. Doch viel ist mir bewischt. Goethe. I do not know everything. Still many things I understand." "That is for you, Charles. Remember that you do not know everything."
Then the voice was directed to Meg.
"To you, I leave my glasses, little blind as a bat. but do not use them except as a last resort. Save them for the final moment of peril.
As she spoke, there was another shimmer of spectacles, and then it was gone, and the voice faded out with it. The spectacles were in Meg's hand. She put them carefully into the breast pocket of her blazer, and the knowledge that they were there somehow made her a little less afraid.
To all three of you I give my command,
Mrs. Witch said.
Go down into the town, go together. Do not let them separate you. Be strong.
There was a flicker, and then it vanished. Meg shivered. Mrs. Watson must have seen the shiver, for she patted Meg on the shoulder. Then she turned to Calvin.
Take care of Meg.
I can take care of Meg,
Charles Wallace said rather sharply.
I always have.
Mrs. Watson looked at Charles Wallace, and the creaky voice seemed somehow both to soften and to deepen at the same time.
Charles Wallace, the danger here is greatest for you.
Why?
Because of what you are. Just exactly because of what you are, you will be by far the most vulnerable. You must stay with Meg and Calvin. You must not go off on your own. Beware of pride and arrogance, Charles, for they may betray you.
At the tone of Mrs. Watsit's voice, both warning and frightening, Meg shivered again, and Charles Wallace butted up against Mrs. Watsit in the way he often did with his mother, whispering,
Now I think I know what you meant about being afraid.
Only a fool is not afraid, Mrs. Watsit told him. Now go.
And where she had been, there was only sky and grasses and a small rock.
Come on, Meg said impatiently. Come on, let's go.
She was completely unaware that her voice was trembling like an aspen leaf. She took Charles Wallace and Calvin each by the hand and started down the hill. Below them, the town was laid out in harsh, angular patterns. The houses in the outskirts were all exactly alike, small, square boxes painted gray. Each had a small, rectangular plot of lawn in front, with a straight line of dull-looking flowers edging the path to the door. Meg had a feeling that if she could count the flowers, there would be exactly the same number for each house. In front of all the houses, children were playing. Some were skipping rope, some were bouncing balls. Meg felt vaguely that something was wrong with their play. It seemed exactly like children playing around any housing development at home, and yet there was something different about it. She looked at Calvin and saw that he, too, was puzzled.
Look, Charles Wallace said suddenly. They're skipping and bouncing in rhythm. Everyone's doing it at exactly the same moment.
This was so. As the skipping rope hit the pavement, so did the ball. As the rope curved over the head of the jumping child, the child with the ball caught the ball. Down came the ropes, down came the balls, over and over again, up, down, all in rhythm, all identical, like the houses, like the paths, like the flowers. Then the doors of all the houses opened simultaneously, and out came women like a row of paper dolls. The print of their dresses was different, but they all gave the appearance of being the same. Each woman stood on the steps of her house. Each clapped. Each child with the ball caught the ball. Each child with the skipping rope folded the rope. Each child turned and walked into the house. The doors clicked shut behind them.
How can they do it? Meg asked wonderingly. We couldn't do it that way if we tried. What does it mean?
Let's go back, Calvin's voice was urgent.
Back? Charles Wallace asked.
Where? I don't know, anywhere. Back to the hill, back to Mrs. What's-It and Mrs. Who and Mrs. Which. I don't like this.
But they aren't there. Do you think they'd come to us if we turned back now?
I don't like it, Calvin said again.
Come on!
Impatience made Meg squeak.
You know we can't go back. Mrs. What's-It said to go into the town.
She started on down the street, and the two boys followed her. The houses, all identical, continued as far as the eye could reach. Then, all at once, they saw the same thing and stopped to watch. In front of one of the houses stood a little boy with a ball, and he was bouncing it. But he bounced it rather badly, and with no particular rhythm, sometimes dropping it and running after it with awkward, furtive leaps, sometimes throwing it up into the air and trying to catch it. The door of his house opened, and out ran one of the mother figures. She looked wildly up and down the street, saw the children, and put her hand to her mouth as though to stifle a scream, grabbed the little boy, and rushed indoors with him. The ball dropped from his fingers and rolled out into the street. Charles Wallace ran after it and picked it up, holding it out for Meg and Calvin to see. It seemed like a perfectly ordinary brown rubber ball.
Let's take it into him and see what happens, Charles Wallace suggested.
Meg pulled at him.
Mrs. What's-It said for us to go on into the town. Well, we are in the town, aren't we? The outskirts, anyhow. I want to know more about this. I have a hunch it may help us later. You go on if you don't want to come with me.
No, Calvin said firmly. We're going to stay together. Mrs. What's-It said we weren't to let them separate us, but I'm with you on this. Let's knock and see what happens.
They went up the path to the house. Meg, reluctant, eager to get on into the town.
Let's hurry, she begged. Please, don't you want to find Father?
Yes, Charles Wallace said, but not blindly. How can we help him if we don't know what we're up against? And it's obvious we've been brought here to help him, not just to find him.
He walked briskly up the steps and knocked at the door. They waited. Nothing happened. Then Charles Wallace saw a bell, and this he rang. They could hear the bell buzzing in the house, and the sound of it echoed down the street. After a moment, the mother figure opened the door. All up and down the street, other doors opened, but only a crack. And eyes peered toward the three children and the woman looking fearfully out the door at them.
What do you want? She asked. It isn't paper time yet. We've had milk time. We've had this month's Puller Prush person, and I've given my decency donations regularly. All my papers are in order.
I think your little boy dropped his ball, Charles Wallace said, holding it out.
The woman pushed the ball away.
Oh, no. The children in our section never drop balls. They're all perfectly trained. We haven't had an aberration for 3 years.
All up and down the block, heads nodded in agreement.
Charles Wallace moved closer to the woman and looked past her into the house. Behind her, in the shadows, he could see the little boy, who must have been about his own age. You can't come in, the woman said. You haven't shown me any papers. I don't have to let you in if you haven't any papers.
Charles Wallace held the ball out beyond the woman so that the little boy could see it. Quick as a flash, the boy leaped forward and grabbed the ball from Charles Wallace's hand, then darted back into the shadows. The woman went very white, opened her mouth as though to say something, then slammed the door in their faces instead. All up and down the street, doors slammed.
What are they afraid of? Charles Wallace asked. What's the matter with them? Don't you know? Meg asked him. Don't you know what all this is about, Charles?
Not yet, Charles Wallace said. Not even an inkling. And I'm trying, but
I didn't get through anywhere, not even a chink. Let's go.
He stumped down the steps.
After several blocks, the houses gave way to apartment buildings. At least Meg felt sure that that was what they must be. They were fairly tall, rectangular buildings, absolutely plain, each window
each entrance exactly like every other. Then, coming toward them down the street, was a boy about Calvin's age riding a machine that was something like a combination of a bicycle and a motorcycle. It had the slimness and lightness of a bicycle,